Alrighty, so we came out of this extra long status hearing today. Truth be told, myself and my lawyers did not expect this thing to last longer than 20, 30 minutes. 2 hours and some change later, Judge Sullivan concludes the hearing. What I want to do is, I understand that some of you had problems being able to dial in and be able to listen to what is going on. So I want to walk you through what happened during this hearing so that you get a full flavor of what it is. It's inside a federal courthouse. It's in front of Judge Emmett Sullivan. There were 3 lawyers for the Department of Justice today, none of whom was Todd Blanche, one of whom was Andrew Block, that I, as you know from my episode earlier today, I predicted that he was going to roll up into court today. No Stanley Woodward, no Todd Blanche. The line prosecutor who's been handling some of the day-to-day was there. His first name is Saif. I forget his last name. And then there was a brand new face of some federal prosecutor. I think his first name was Garrison. So he was there. Straight out of the gate, what do we know? None of these lawyers from the Department of Justice representing Todd Blanche today knew what the hell was going on, especially this guy, Andrew Block. Whether you think it was an intentional thing where he could sit there and feign ignorance with Judge Sullivan, or he legit sincerely didn't know because he had just been dropped into or parachuted into this case, who knows? But it was very evident the second that Judge Sullivan took the bench that this guy did not know and did not have answers, and that did not go well with Judge Sullivan at all. So I'm going to go to my notes and I'm going to walk through them with you because I want to make sure that you guys also have the full flavor of what happened today. The judge immediately started with the redactions for the names of the victims that Todd Blanche claims have either self-identified or identified through counsel that they are victims. And that's the reason why their names or their email addresses have been redacted from these documents that were provided to Judge Sullivan in an unredacted form for an in-camera or an in-chambers review. There was a second binder. We don't know what's inside of it, but according to this lawyer, Andrew Block, this second binder that was handed up to the judge today contained the, quote, corroborating documentation that the judge had originally ordered from Todd Blanche that would substantiate the claim that the redactions pertained to people, again, who claim that they are victims, or they have either self-identified, excuse me, or they used lawyers to identify themselves as victims. Andrew Block says that the second binder handed up to the judge is a, quote, representative sample of this victims in this case, and that according to the attorney review protocol, which I've covered here before, which was just made up by the DOJ and was not done in compliance, frankly, with the Epstein Files Transparency Act, because it expands the DOJ's spectrum of redactions and withholdings, there is a, quote, sliding scale of documentation available to the DOJ when it comes to people being able to identify themselves as victims. The department didn't weigh on the amount, didn't consider the amount of information. They just took at face value a representation by a victim or by their counsel, and that's how they applied the redactions. So that is what Andrew Block told the judge. The judge said, I will look at your submission of the second binder and I will look at it privately in chambers and I will advise. Now, with regards to those interview notes, the handwritten interview notes by the FBI agents of that 13-year-old girl who alleges that, of the woman who alleges when she was 13 that she was sexually abused by Donald Trump and physically battered. According to this DOJ lawyer, Andrew Block, because those handwritten FBI notes are duplicative of the FBI 302s, which are like the official reports that are generated, that's why they're not turning them over. And the judge pressed him and said, I don't understand. You don't have any additional information for me. You were supposed to come to court today and give me additional information as to why you cannot manually redact these handwritten notes. The judge asked Mr. Block, how many pages are there of these notes so I have an understanding of what's at issue? Block said, I don't have that info. Court says, you don't have an approximation of the numbers? And how about, have there ever been other handwritten notes that have been published that have been redacted? To which Andrew Block said, not to my knowledge. That is an untrue statement. We know that handwritten notes that accompany the FBI 302s, that they've been turned over. We've seen them ourselves in the production by the DOJ. At this point, this Andrew Block guy was struggling, face turning red, hands were shaking, he was stuttering, he wasn't really able to explain himself to the court because the court kept on saying, well, What is the cause? I asked Blanche to come and show cause why he could not do these redactions of the handwritten notes. And Block says, well, it's just duplicative. But remember, people, they never said it was duplicative. They said it was substantially similar. They said the handwritten notes were substantially similar to the 302s, and that's the reason why they weren't turning them over. So then the court said to Block, you have nothing to add to the previous response that was made by Todd Blanche. Block says, we're just looking for a clear order. And the court goes, well, what's unclear here? Yikes. And the court says, can't you tell me, is there another way to do the redactions? Okay, no response from Blanc. We need a good, clean order here because we're having difficulty understanding at this procedural posture what you want us to do. I mean, when I tell you how long this was, it was horrifically, painfully long, the back and forth on this. I was embarrassed for this DOJ attorney because he didn't really know how to answer these questions, right? And so what Andrew Block on behalf of the DOJ did, he spent so much time complaining about the Herculean efforts that hundreds of DOJ personnel undertook to be able to do the redactions for millions of pages. Judge Sullivan was unswayed by this. And let me be clear, Judge Sullivan was not being cruel. He wasn't being impatient. In fact, I was like, this guy is giving him so much grace. This judge is giving this AUSA so much grace that I didn't think this AUSA deserved. And yet the judge was insistent on trying to let this AUSA save his, I guess, position on what he was saying here. So just want to make sure that we stay on track. So the redaction log. The judge asked Andrew Block, do you have a time frame by which you're going to be able to provide this? And Block said, I don't. Block says, there's a process underway regarding the Federal Register log. I don't know the timing. Judge Sullivan says, can you give me a date by which you're going to accomplish this? Because it was supposed to have been done, or at least there's an interpretation of the law that it should have been done by December of 2025. Andrew Block says, I don't have a date. Judge Sullivan says, but you knew it was going to be discussed today. So how come you don't have any of this information I'm asking of you? And Block says, it's coming, Judge, but this is all out of my control. Then the judge is like, don't you have a time frame? 30, 60 days? Someone from DOJ has to answer this. And the judge says, the Epstein Act said that this had to be done. Congress intended that this be completed back in December of 2025. So I need to know, what is the DOJ doing to comply with this redaction log? And then the judge said something that I thought was really important, people. He said, is this case being afforded priority in the DOJ? How is this case not a front and center prioritized case at the DOJ? It's important. It's the Epstein files. And when Judge Sullivan said this, I was like, yes, finally, somebody is actually saying out loud what we've all been saying, which is this should be the priority for the DOJ. Then Judge Sullivan says, how is that nobody can give me a date by which this redaction log is going to be done with the Federal Register? I want you to get that person on the phone. If not, then I'm going to be forced to impose a date, and I don't want to be arbitrary and do that. Judge Sullivan then said, Congress intended the public and the victims to get this information. My job as the judge to ensure that this law is enforced. Then Andrew Block, on behalf of Todd Blanche, says, oh, Mr. Blanche has tried to comply with this order, but we need a clear, clean order. And then Judge Sullivan said, you want another order? And it's going to say something to the effect of, I really mean it this time. At which point in time, the courtroom erupted in laughter because it was just so absurd because Block kept on saying, I need a clean order. I need a clean, clear order. And the judge said, you know what? Part of me contemplated doing sealed proceedings where I invited just the government into court and no one else and allowed them to speak to me and walk through these unredacted items. But then the judge says, but then I said no, because the public has the right to know what's going on. The victims have the right to know, quote, what the hell is going on in this case. Now, with regards to the foreign language documents, the court says, I ordered the defendant, Todd Blanche, to initiate review of these documents and to give notice that this review was underway. And instead, Todd Blanche said that the court can't supplant Congress's acceptance of it's not practicable to be able to do these interpretations or these translations. And Sullivan said, I'm just trying to ensure compliance here because this is a requirement that is long overdue for these documents. Andrew Block, on behalf of Todd Blanche, says, I don't even know how many documents there are when the judge asked him. And then the judge says, but you knew this was going to be discussed today. Do you guys see a theme here or a common denominator questioning from the court? You're at the podium as counsel for the attorney general, and you don't have this information. I mean, this is the kind of dialogue that was going on and on. And then the judge took a maybe 30, 40 minute recess. And when he resumed back on the bench, he said, look, he ordered me as Ms. Fang to be able to prepare a proposed order about the FBI notes. The handwritten notes must be produced in camera, in chambers to Judge Sullivan, unredacted to be reviewed. And then with regards to the Federal Register, that redaction log, there's going to be the requirement that a declaration be done about the status of it, who's done it, who's been reviewing it, what's been going on, because Judge Sullivan wants the DOJ to have to own the representations made on the record today. And he told us, my side, to be able to prepare these proposed orders and this issue about the declaration in 10 days. And then this is a really important part of what happened today, and I want to make sure that we talk about this. I had raised the issue of having Todd Blanche held in contempt of court. The judge took a long time to explain an anecdote about how he, years ago, held four DOJ prosecutors in contempt of court, in civil contempt, because they refused to turn over documents to a criminal defendant. Once he held these federal prosecutors in contempt of court, he purged the contempt once they turned over the documents. Three out of those four federal prosecutors appealed that order of contempt, and the federal appeals court upheld Judge Sullivan's finding of contempt. Judge Sullivan said, I am the only federal judge who has held DOJ attorneys in civil contempt. Now, I have no desire to do it again, but because contempt is serious. But he said this, but I will do it. That's not a threat. That's a promise. He then went on to say is, I am not focused on contempt. I am focused on compliance with court orders. I understand how difficult your job is. No one ever has enough time, but you've never asked me for more time. And he goes, look, we don't have to do a conversation. I'm just talking about this. You don't have to respond. This was so important because he made it very clear to these DOJ attorneys that he's willing and able to do it. He doesn't want to hold them in contempt, but he's done it before and he'll do it again. And that's a really important lesson to impart to these young lawyers that showed up. Although again, I'm not quite sure if it was an intentional thing to bring these lawyers in at the last minute that didn't have answers that the judge demanded. I know it was frustrating. I heard that we pretty much crashed the dial-in system for the court today, so a lot of you weren't able to get this. I'll do a little bit more of a deeper analysis tomorrow, but I just wanted to make sure that I got this readout to you immediately so that you had this information. As always, thanks for the support. And be mad, be outraged, and demand accountability.